Hello, I'm Michael Toms.
And I'm Justine Willis-Toms.
We'd like to welcome you to this special edition of New Dimensions, produced especially for this pledge drive. Public radio is a jewel, where you can hear programming such as New Dimensions. It is only through your support of this station that this kind of programming can be heard in your community. When you pledge your dollars in support of New Dimensions and the other fine programs on this station, you're making a difference in your community.
The program we're bringing you today is an interview of Michael conducted by a friend and previous guest on New Dimensions, physicist and educator Robert Fuller.
Remember, as you listen, this special program is brought to you to encourage you to call in your support. We want you to light up the phone lines with your pledge. Now stay tuned and enjoy listening with us.
Michael, welcome.
Nice to be here, Bob, on the other side of the microphone.
Yeah, it's a reverse for us.
Yes.
But I first heard you on the air over 25 years ago and was lucky to meet you very soon afterwards and have followed New Dimensions through its quarter century of growth. And before we go to the present, I'd like to just touch back in the early years when you and Justine were creating it and ask you, what was the seminal event that catalyzed the whole vision of New Dimensions, which you have now largely realized?
Well, I think the seminal event was attending a conference at the University of California, Berkeley, which was entitled Frontiers of Consciousness. And it was a presentation by six different people, ranging in different fields, talking about consciousness. And there were two things there. It was the time that the Uri Geller research was being released from SRI, and that was announced there, and what had happened with Uri Geller at SRI, Stanford Research Institute, and their research on his ability to do things with his consciousness. So that was part of it, and that was the kind of the big play. And there was a filled auditorium. And one of the people who presented was Charles Tart, who is a psychologist and was a professor at UC Davis. He's now professor emeritus, and he teaches at the California Institute the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. Charles was saying something about how we're in the most important revolution in the history of humanity on the planet. And he said, it's the revolution in consciousness. And nobody knows about it, and no one's talking about it, and there's no funding for it, and it's not in the media. That remark really hit me, and it came kind of went past my intellect and into my core of my being. And then the other thing that happened at that event, that conference, was Ralph Metzner did a guided meditation, a visualization actually, with 1,500 people there. And he was using a particular technique called the Yoga of Light Fire. And I saw 1,500 people go into this space where their consciousness was altered. I know mine was. And I think a lot of others were, too. That was impressive to me. So the next morning over breakfast, I'm there with Justine and with a good friend of ours who was staying with us at the time, Jim Hill. And I said, you know, it's amazing to me that there isn't more in the media and more out there about what's going on. I mean, you know, the 60s had happened and so much was going on in the Bay Area. It was as the consciousness candy store at the time. There was things erupting. There were teachers coming from the East. The human potential movement was exploding. Lots of new things. The science was taking a new tack.
What was the year?
1973.
Okay.
And it was March of 1973. And so over that breakfast table, I made this statement about why, you know, there should be something else, something happening. Somebody should be doing something. And my friend, Jim Hill, looked at me and said, well, why don't you do something? And it was one of those remarks, you know, that's always timing. Mm-hmm. And it was a catalyst. And I said, well, I will.
Did you have any background in radio?
No. The only background I had in radio was I had a predilection to wanting to do radio because I remember I didn't go right to college out of high school. I spent I didn't start till the second semester, winter semester. And during that time, I worked and I also went to night school in radio broadcasting school. And then I chose a university that had a major department in radio, television, and film. So I had this
kind of predilection. Did you do anything with radio, television, and film at college?
No. Well, I did. I majored in that subject.
You did.
I studied broadcasting.
And, yeah.
But then I left that college. I mean, basically, then things changed. When I left college, you know, I wound up going to work in something totally different, and it took me roughly, 14 years to get into radio, and then it kind of, happened by, quote, accident.
Blocks was in place in the sense that you were not unfamiliar with radio and with broadcasting.
No, and I grew up with live radio, and then live television came into into play. So I had a real deep love of that medium.
So two questions. What did you do first, and what was the first on-the-air experience you ever had after starting New Dimensions Radio?
Well, first of all, we started New Dimensions with the idea that it would be an organization that would overview and kind of see what was happening and present it in a way that people could see the connections. Because I saw that all these things were connected at the deepest level. Mm-hmm. And there was a major shift happening, a cultural shift as I saw it. And so how do we do this? And so what the vision was to do conferences, lectures, and tapes and get those out to people. Mm-hmm. It wasn't initially radio.
Okay.
And so we first did a series of lectures, six lectures in San Francisco with six different people from very different fields. It was called Horizons of Consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I remember on the fourth lecture, there were some people that came that heard it and came up to us after the lecture and said, you know, what you're doing here, because what we were doing, presenting, again, the idea of presenting different seemingly disparate points of view, but then when you put them together, they kind of all connected and interrelated. And these people really got it, and they came up and said, you know, you really ought to do this on the radio. Well, it turned out the person who was making the statement happened to be doing a program on KQED-FM. And he said, you know, I think I can help you get on the radio if you're interested. And I looked at Justine, and I said, well, why not, you know? And so the next thing we know, a month later, we had a half hour every other week on KQED-FM, the flagship NPR station in San Francisco. And so that first experience, that first interview, I remember the interview was with Robert Ornstein and Werner Erhard.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I might have heard it because it was in 74 that I first heard you on the radio.
This would have been 73, the fall of 73. Okay. And then that we went from a half hour every other week to a half hour, and then they gave us an hour a week. Mm-hmm. And we started that in January of 74. And then by the end of 74, the station offered us a four-hour slot on Saturday evening. And that's when the New Dimensions title was birthed, in January of 75. Mm-hmm. And that's when the New Dimensions program actually began as a four-hour live radio program.
And when did you get your theme song that you still use?
Well, we experimented with theme songs for a few years. And we eventually wound up with Paul Winter's Icarus. And Paul was gracious enough to give us the rights to use that as an introductory theme. And it stood up all these years, and it's still there. And when people hear that music, they recognize it's New Dimensions.
They do.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful piece of music.
It's actually a Ralph Towner piece of music, and the Paul Winter Consort.
And how about the quote that opens the shows?
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. That quote actually started as a piece that was in a book called The Highest State of Consciousness, which was an edited anthology by John White that was published in 1973. And it was like a Bantam paperback. And I saw that in there. It was a kind of like, it's morphed through a lot of changes. But the original idea for that piece came from that book. And as I say, it's gone through a number of changes over the years, and now it's what it is. But that was the origins of it.
Okay, let's jump ahead a bit. Not all the way to 9/11. Let's not jump that far. But let's get a little feel for how the program changed over the two and a half decades, between its beginnings, which you've described, and this latest phase, which culminates in the book, A Time for Choices, based on the hundreds of interviews you've done since 9/11.
Well, I think the big shift for New Dimensions was when the public radio satellite was launched, public broadcasting satellite system was launched in 1980. We were among the first producers to access that system. And so in March of 1980, we went national. But within a few months, we had 100 stations who had agreed to carry New Dimensions on a weekly basis for a year. And that was the arrangement, that was the agreement. And that was quite exciting to us because suddenly we went from just having a few stations in the Bay Area to having a lot of stations all over the country. And so at that time, our outreach expanded exponentially, and so consequently our support base expanded because we're a listener-supported producer, very rare animal in public radio. And so we started getting more support from our listeners and more support through the sales of tapes.
What percentage of your support is listener support and what percentage is sale of tapes?
Well, sale of tapes really at this point in time is a break-even proposition.
Oh.
It used to generate plus revenue, but no longer is that the case. And so it's really a service that we provide, and it's kind of break-even. It basically, the costs match up to the revenue. And really our support comes, we're about 70% supported by our listeners, and the other, the balance of 30% comes from non-commercial underwriting from organizations and other forms of support that come in, like grants, for an example.
Yeah. In the 80s, in the 90s, what interviews jump out at you as having been the most exciting ones you've done, or among the most exciting? I don't mean you to do a comparison, but just what were some high points for you personally?
In the 90s?
The whole way through.
All the way through. Well, I think I have to say that I've been blessed and gifted with having interviewed some really, I think, people of mastery over the years. And certainly I would think of Joseph Campbell. I would think of Buckminster Fuller. I would think of Krishnamurti. I would think of Alice Walker. And interesting with Alice Walker, my conversations seem to be, we've continued this dialogue over a period of years, and every time we get together, it goes deeper. Mm. And that's part of the, I think part of why New Dimensions is something that is kind of, it's a process that's ongoing, that a lot of these people that we've tracked over time. Mm-hmm. So I think of Andy Weil as an example, first interviewing the most famous doctor in America
now,
in 1975, when he was certainly not the most famous doctor. Nobody knew who he was. And he was trekking the jungles of Yucatan, seeking out plants, natural plants for healing. And so, and then tracking Andy over the period of 25 years and this time is like seeing him go through a number of different incarnations to where he is now. And also, you know, yourself. I mean, I first interviewed you in the 70s and what you were doing then and kind of civil, doing citizen diplomacy, right?
Citizen diplomacy,
that's
right.
And,
take your vacation
and the
in Russia.
Moat Su project and take your vacation in the Soviet Union and all of that and tracking you over the years. And so I think that's true about a number of people and I just mentioned a few of them.
How many different people have you interviewed? Approximately.
Over 3,000.
Over 3,000.
Yes.
And you have all these tapes archived somewhere.
Yes.
Safely?
Safely.
Good, Michael. My guest is Michael Toms, author of A Time for Choices. I'm Robert Fuller, and this is New Dimensions. My guest is Michael Toms, author of A Time for Choices. I'm Robert Fuller, and this is New Dimensions. Michael, you were telling us of some of the high points in the earlier years of New Dimensions. Let's jump ahead now to the last year and the series that you began, and you've done so many interviews post 9/11. What were some of the high points in that, and how did the book emerge from that series of interviews?
Let me go back a year before 9/11, because it relates. And that is one of the people that I, quote, discovered. I heard him speak at a conference in the fall of 2000. His name is Bill McDonough, William McDonough. And he's an architect by training, and he's an anticipatory design scientist in the lineage of Bucky Fuller, also in the lineage of Thomas Jefferson. He was the dean of architecture at the University of Virginia for 5 years, actually lived in one of the buildings that Jefferson designed for faculty. He mm-hmm. lived in a Jefferson-built house, designed house for 5 years that he was dean of architecture at the University of Virginia. And I heard him speak, and I was just struck by his ability to think outside the box. And this is the man who was named by Time as one of the visionaries of the 20th century, 21st century, in 1999, and also received the top environmental award from the president. And he is currently working to design the Rouge River, Ford Rouge River plant to be sustainable within 10 years. There's some 40 projects that he's on top of there at the Rouge River plant at Ford. And so he's inside. He's also, he's well known for doing the corporate retreat center for the Gap, which is south of San Francisco, just above the airport, and it's got a sod roof, and it's been gotten all kinds of awards as an energy efficient building, although it wasn't built to be energy efficient. It was just built to be sustainable. And anyway, so he's a very, very interesting man, and the reason I find him interesting is not only does he think outside the box, but he also I think practices something that Jefferson came up with, fierce commotion, creating fierce commotion with what he says. Jefferson was into conversation, and so was McDonough. McDonough is someone who, because he doesn't come from blame and judgment, he comes from, this is the way I see it, this is the way it is, and so he's presenting to corporations like Ford a sustainable direction to go in, and then he lays out the facts and figures and says, in 5 years, this is what will happen. Now, here's the way you're doing it now. In 5 years, this is what will happen. Mm. And the bottom line, or as he calls it, the top line, mm-hmm. comes out better going sustainable. And so that allows him to get through the doors. That gets him inside. And I think that's important, because it's important to be inside these structures. You know, it's not enough to pass a law or to say, okay, you need to do this. But you and I both know that it's inside these structures where the real change has to happen. Yeah. So it's like the FBI and the CIA. You can pass all the laws and you want to, okay, you have to cooperate, you have to, but it's the structure, interior structure of those organizations that has to be reformed mm-hmm. and revamped and rethunk, mm-hmm. you know, rethought if there's going to be cooperation and collaboration and all of that. So that's what McDonough is doing. And so I then took it upon myself to really connect with him. And we did a series of dialogues, which started in Charlottesville at Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson. Those are called the Monticello Dialogues, and they have been on public radio, a series of 3 programs. Another 3 are coming. And so we're continuing this dialogue. And it's all about thinking outside the box and what's possible. And because New Dimensions likes to play, and I like to play, in the field of possibilities, people like McDonough are fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm. And you began with him before
9/11. And then that really got me onto Jefferson. And, you know, I was raised in Virginia and had come up, you know, knowing Thomas Jefferson and the founders, and walked the cobblestone streets in Alexandria and went in the same church that George Washington did to visit. And, you know, and all that's very present. Yeah. And you just, you know, it's in when you spend your first 20 years of your life there, it's in your bones. And so I remember my dad taking me to the Jefferson Memorial, which was built just during the Second World War, and the tidal basin. And remember him remarking on the irony of the fact that the tidal basin was ringed with Japanese cherry blossom trees that the Japanese government had given.
Yeah.
And here was Jefferson, the memorial right there. And the irony of that, because the Second World War was happening. And then I remember later reading some of the inscriptions that were on the wall there in the Jefferson Memorial, and just being struck by Jefferson. And of course, where I lived, there was a Thomas Jefferson Junior High, a Thomas Jefferson High School. Thomas Jefferson was everywhere. And I look back on that and I say he was the first comprehensivist or first generalist that I encountered in my life. And I was struck by his capacity to hold a lot of knowledge, to embrace a lot of topics. That was very attractive to me. And I can look back on that and see that was something that really touched me deeply. So here I meet McDonough on Jefferson's turf in Monticello. I'm re-inspirited by Jefferson. And so I find myself just compulsively, almost obsessively, getting every book I can buying about Jefferson, and started reading everything I could about Jefferson. And along with that, learning as much as I could about the American Revolution and what the origins of that were.
Just prior to
9/11, yes. And so 9/11 happens, and it was like, oh, that's the reason I've been doing this, you know, because it was kind of like almost like preparation. And then right after 9/11, I wrote a number of essays, which I put out to everybody I could put out to. And then I just felt I had to talk to people, and so I started talking to people. And that started off as reflections on 9/11. It morphed into the reflections on the war on terrorism, and then it eventually became A Time for Choices, which I believe is a great title because it is a time for choices.
Tell us something about the book.
Well, the book contains 43 contributions from people that I interviewed out of the 150. It contains interviews that I did over the first 6 months of doing A Time for Choices, and it's arranged in 9 different chapters, and it kind of starts with the interviews I did right after 9/11, within days of 9/11, and so it kind of recaptures that experience, and then it takes off from there into the possibilities. It goes from there to the present and the future, and so the book is really, it embraces a lot of vantage points, diverse range. I mean, it includes clergy and poets and media activists, educators, historians, former government leaders. So it's a very, diverse range of people, mm-hmm. and I think that's one of the benefits of it is that it is a diverse range of people coming from very different perspectives. And also what I think runs through the book, the theme that runs through the book, is that there's a connection between any kind of activism or taking a stand and our deeper spiritual roots, our deeper self. And so the book makes that connection. In fact, there's a chapter called Going Deeper, the Spiritual Dimension. But even through in the other chapters, there's that connection that it's not enough to take a stand and to be against something or be for something, but it also is important to come from our own authenticity, our own authentic self, and to make that connection. And I think A Time for Choices does that.
The subtitle, Deep Dialogues for Deep Democracy. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I think so, because I think a lot of the people that I interviewed on Time for Choices, people, there's the range of folks. One of the questions I would tend to ask was, what is personally sustaining you in these times? That's a question that goes to the root of who you are and what your values are and the deeper side. And so I think the nature of the conversations that have come out of A Time for Choices are deeper conversations. They're going to the roots of, I think all of us, as a result of 9/11, really was a wake-up call in the sense of having to look at, well, what is life about? What is life about? And realizing that we don't know what the future holds. We're not in control here. And so what am I doing right now in this moment? How am I living my life? And why am I here? And what is my life about? And what are my children going to inherit? What are my grandchildren going to inherit? Those kinds of questions, I think those questions emerged big time out of 9/11. And so, yes, it's deep dialogues. And for deep democracy, the term deep democracy, I first heard from Arnie Mendel, mm-hmm. who's trained as a physicist, like you are, and also a Jungian analyst, but he's kind of the father of process psychology, where he's taken psychology to the place where he's using principles of psychology to affect social change. And I think that's the leading edge of psychology, that where you're actually taking those tools out and you're working in process. And so that's where I first heard the term deep democracy, and I've always kept it around. And my definition of deep democracy is that there are certain universal core values, and they're contained in our Declaration of Independence, in our Constitution, in our Bill of Rights.
And what?
Well, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are inherent. They're inalienable, cannot be taken away. Those are core universal values.
From Americans or from anybody?
Well, I think the Declaration says for everybody. It says all men, let's say now it'd be all people. It doesn't say all Americans. It says all men. I interpret that to be everywhere, all men everywhere, all people everywhere. So it's a document, I think, that's a visionary document for the world. I think it has been the attractor, the magnet, that has drawn people from other lands to the American vision, that vision that's contained in the Declaration of Independence, which is a visionary document. It's a revolutionary document, but different than any other revolutionary document in that it incorporated an abstract concept, namely the natural law and a creator God. That's in the Declaration of Independence. That had never happened before in a revolutionary document, to make that connection. And so that makes it different and also sets it apart from anything in the past. And I think the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are in process. And they were intended to be a process. And it's right there in the documents that this is, you know, that basically you can read that it's a process. And clearly, I mean, they were thinking hundreds of years hence. What's amazing to me is that all of these people got together at the same time, and they all really were thinking ahead to the future. They were visionaries. They were thinking outside the box. They were not just concerned with what was going on then, although they were deeply concerned with what was going on then, but they also were deeply concerned with the effect of what they were doing on the future. That was unusual, where all these people had this similar thing. I mean, you can read the letters. You can read Adams' letters. You can read to his wife. You can read Jefferson. And they're talking about generations hence. It's actually there in black and white. They're saying, this Adams writing to Abigail, saying, this work we're doing, you know, he's writing from the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. This work we're about is not just for the present. This is for generations hence. This is for 200. I mean, they're actually seeing that and realizing it as they're doing it. That's amazing, to be aware of history as it's happening in the moment, in present time. That's strikingly unusual, and that's the birth of this country.
My guest is Michael Toms, author of A Time for Choices. I'm Robert Fuller, and this is New Dimensions. My guest is Michael Toms, author of A Time for Choices. I'm Robert Fuller, and this is New Dimensions. Michael, you were telling us about the origins of the book, and I'm wondering two things. Who do you want to read this book? And do you imagine, you said democracy is a process. Is A Time for Choices a process? Do you see a sequel? Do you see more interviews of the same sort?
Well, I continue to do interviews for A Time for Choices. Whether another book comes or not, I don't know. But clearly, it is still A Time for Choices, and there's lots of events happening in the world that demand that A Time for Choices continue, because I think, you know, what it's about is that people realizing, just as I realized, that we do have lots of choices. There are lots of alternatives. And unfortunately, in the major mass media, many of these choices are not being heard or given voice. And so that's why I continue to do it. As far as who reads A Time for Choices, I think everyone who's concerned about our nation and the future of our country and our planet should read it. And so if that's a concern, I think that you should read A Time for Choices, because there is such a wide range of voices there. It's not just one voice saying what they think, but a range of voices. And so you can compare, you can contrast, and from your own perspective. And so it's a book with ideas and visions and dreams and possibilities. And I like to, whenever I expose myself to dreams, visions, and possibilities from other folks, they spur and catalyze dreams and visions and possibilities in me, which is the whole idea. And that's, I think, at the core of democracy, is dialogue and dissent. Both are crucial. And without dialogue, it's not possible to have any intelligent dissent. And there's nothing wrong with dissenting in a democracy. I mean, that's what democracy is about. It's about questioning everything. I mean, we should be questioning. And I think that's where the heart of the matter lies. And I notice in these times that when people are in positions of strength or power or whatever, start to question, they're accused of being un-American or not patriotic, or how can you say that, or how can you do that? And frankly, I'm surprised at that, because it seems to me it's the heart of democracy is questioning.
Deep dialogue.
Yes.
For deep democracy.
Yes. And that's what A Time for Choices is about, deep dialogues for deep democracy. And so I encourage everyone to have dialogue. Start in your own house, in your own community, with your friends, with your neighbors. And there are lots of places. I mean, as I look around the United States and I travel, I see that there are groups getting together everywhere. Now, you don't find these, you don't read about these in the major newspapers. You don't read about this, you don't see it on television news. But there are hundreds, thousands of groups getting together all over the country that are speaking and listening to one another about the possibilities of peace, the questioning whether a war is appropriate, whether a war footing is appropriate. I mean, just like we look at the war on terrorism, I mean, how can we have a war on terrorism? Terrorism doesn't, it's an idea, it's not a nation, it's not a government. We can have an intention to go after terrorists, but does it have to be a war intention that we are making war on terrorism? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
These are some of the questions raised
in the
book,
right? These are the questions,
right?
Exactly. These are questions raised in the book, and they're questions, I think, that need to be raised. And
so let's say you read the book and you find an essay or two that really speaks to you. What can you do about it?
Well, I think all the contributors, any contributors that have websites are described in the back of the book. Every contributor has a bio, and if they have a website, it's there. If you just went through all the websites that are in the back of A Time for Choices, you would have a raft of choices and a raft of ideas about, and you would see some of the things that are happening in America right now.
You'd find ways to join up with like-minded people?
Exactly. And so those websites are one way. And then also I wrote an epilogue to the book where I kind of encapsulated what I felt A Time for Choices was about at the end. And I also said what I'm doing. And I gave a whole list of things that I do personally as suggestions.
Give me a sample.
Well, for example, there are certain publications I read. There's websites I go to, like commondreams.org or moveon.org or progressivesecretary.org. These are websites that allow you to express your voice, to express yourself in ways that are automatic, that are just very easy, very simple. The publications I read the New York Times. I think it's a good newspaper in many ways. You know, it doesn't have everything. It's not the best in every way, but I look for lights in the news. When I look at the news and use the media, I try to look for lights. I look for what's between the lines, and I look for what are some of the emerging possibilities. And I'll find them on, you know, the back sections of the Times or in an editorial or an op-ed column. And so I appreciate the Times for that point, for that, allowing some of those other voices to get out there. At the same time, they too have a tendency to express the party line, this kind of unidimensional view of how the world works.
Let me try and link the beginning of this conversation and what you've been saying in the last few minutes. One would sense a shift from issues of consciousness, spiritual issues, to issues of politics and policy. How does New Dimensions bridge these two areas?
Well, I think it's a natural bridge in the sense that I don't think any political action or social action is possible without first beginning with deeply personal action on oneself. That it's important to make the connection that unless we're moving from our authentic self, that anything we do in the world is going to be less than who we are, going to be less than our fullness. And in order to give our fullness to whatever it is we're doing, we need to go deeply within. It's not to say that we go and meditate on a mountaintop, or it's whatever you do to find that place within yourself that allows you to come from your authentic self, and not just from your head, not just from your intellect, but to make that connection with the head mind and the heart mind, that inner and outer. The outer is dependent on the inner, and the inner relates to the outer. The both are connected.
So that's the link right there.
That's the link.
Between the politics, which is the outer,
right,
and the inner, which is the origins of the radio program.
They're not opposed to one another.
They're not opposed.
They're not in opposition. In fact, you know, it's like taking an in-breath and an out-breath. It's like they're connected. They're part and parcel of the same thing. And what I'm suggesting is that if we just do the outer without the inner, then that's the place for burnout. That's the place that's not as effective. It's ineffective, in fact. Eventually, it will not work.
So New Dimensions Radio is going to continue to synthesize these, the inner and the outer.
I think that's what New Dimensions Radio...
It's not that you have turned political or anything like that, even though in the last year you may have done more interviews that have a political quality.
I think that we've always been outer. We've always been inner, mm-hmm. and we'll continue to be that. And because I think every act is political. Whatever we do is political. If you don't vote, that's political in the sense that that's a vote. Whatever we do is political. I mean, I think all of our activity has political ramifications. Mm-hmm. If we don't do anything, if we do nothing, that has political ramifications.
We learned that in the 60s.
Yes, we did. Yes.
Yeah. So what do you see as the next steps, the next steps for New Dimensions?
Well, I think that we just need to continue doing what we're doing, and the technologies are such now that we're able to get our message and the voices and views that we are presenting out to more people.
How many people?
Well, in this country, 1.5 million.
1.5 million.
Yes. And
worldwide?
Worldwide, up to 10 million. Worldwide.
A week,
yes.
Listeners,
yes. And so that feels really good, and I think that, you know, in the last couple of years, our audience has expanded exponentially, mostly because I think the technologies, I mean, the fact that we're streaming audio on the World Wide Web, anybody in the world can listen to us. So more than 130 countries have tuned into New Dimensions on the World Wide Web. So that's like having, you know, that's like having an international transmitter, and so which is effectively what it is. And so then also we're now on Sirius Satellite Radio 3 times a day on the Wisdom Radio channel, and that service, which is an audio service fed by satellite to car radios. So things like that are happening, which get New Dimensions out there in a much wider way to more people. And I think we just keep doing what we're doing.
If people hearing this wanted to get hold of this book, how could they?
Well, the best way to get a hold of it, I think, in this program, is to make a pledge to the station. And by making a pledge, you'll get a copy of A Time for Choices. And I think it's the two are connected, because public radio is a very important and rare resource that we have. It's one of the places in the media where you can hear alternative voices and views. And you can't hear them in most of the other media. And so that's why I think it's important for people to, as I say, stand up and speak out and speak up for what you think is important. And if you're getting value from this public radio station, support it. It's time to stand up and be counted. And if you want this kind of media to be out there, then make a pledge and that'll happen. And so by making a pledge, you can receive a copy of A Time for Choices. And that's a double win. You'll get some great information, and you'll also support your local public radio station, and that's important.
And you'll get the essence of almost 50 of the interviews done since 9/11.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, because one of the benefits of A Time for Choices, the book, is that it does put a lot of different views in one place. It's all gathered together for you, so it's like all put together, it's very easy. One book, you got a lot of voices, a lot of views. And I think that will spur you on. The reader will be spurred on, hopefully, to other places and other ideas, and which is the whole nature, I think, of democracy in action. Community, democracy in action. And that's how it happens.
Where do you see our democracy going?
Well, I can say where I hope it goes.
Where's
I hope
that?
It goes to more community and more populist democracy where people, I mean, I think democracy is alive and well in small towns around the country, and it's expanding. I think that's growing, and we just need to get it out there in the big cities as well. So, You know, and each of us is responsible for that, starting in our own communities, taking it out there.
My guest has been Michael Toms, author of A Time for Choices. I'm Robert Fuller. This is New Dimensions.
We hope you've enjoyed this specially produced program just for you. All of us at New Dimensions and here at this station care about the quality programming you hear on public radio. Your dollars make a huge difference in what programming you hear on this station. If you appreciate New Dimensions and public radio, you can show it by calling and pledging your support now.
Justine and I urge you to become active in your community and in the world. Public radio provides you with the perfect opportunity. Your community needs this station, and this station needs you. Use your money to bring about positive change and call in your pledge now. Let's light up those phone lights with your pledge. In this way, you can make a difference.
This is Justine Willis Toms.
And Michael Toms. Thanks for listening to this special program. Make your pledge. You'll be glad you did. Here's the number to call.